In my never-ending quest to interview the most interesting people on the planet, OWC Radio number 43 delivers. You got to check out this interview with Ed Gottwald. You're going to really like this. Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here, OWC Radio, and I think you're going to like this episode. Here's why. In my never-ending quest of interviewing interesting people that you may have never heard of from a very diverse background, I've got what I think is a crown jewel. And I need to thank John Putch for putting me in touch with this person. His name is Ed Gottwald. And he is known as Mr. Ed, and he runs Mr. Ed's Elephant Museum and Candy Emporium. Actually, his granddaughter runs it. Ed is the founder. He ran it and sold the business to her not too long ago. And what a fantastic interview. Ed is 79 years old and an amazing person. Now, we did have some technical difficulties with the interview, with Skype specifically. For whatever reason, it kept dropping out, and I was only hearing every third or fourth word. So what we did was I used Skype to call his cell phone number, and that's how we did the interview. So the audio quality isn't up to the usual standards of our interview, but that's okay because the content is what's important, right? And the content with what Mr. Ed has to say, I think you're really going to dig it. I really do. Their website, by the way, is MrEds.com, and it's Mr. spelled out. And I will put a link to Mr. Ed's Elephant Museum and Candy Emporium in the show notes for OWC number 43. I think you're going to dig it, though. Before we get to that, though, it's been a busy couple weeks. That's why there was no show last week. I did L.A., San Francisco, and I did a show in Chicago, and the one in Chicago was really, really fun, I have to be honest. It was called Mac Stock, and I've talked about it here on OWC Radio in the past for a couple times, and in fact, we had Mike Potter on OWC Radio to talk about Mac Stock. It's a one-day event, but I'm happy to say that next year looks like it's going to be a two-day event. Date has not been set yet, but it was a one-day event, June 20th. It was a lot of fun. And if you want to see some pictures from the event, simply go to blog.macsales.com. And I've got an article up there that says, "See the sights from Mac Stock 2015. And there's a bunch of pictures. It was a lot of fun. And I look forward to meeting more Mac users next year at this event. But there's another event coming up this week. So today, as I record this, it's Tuesday. You're probably listening to it on Wednesday or Thursday. But on Thursday and Friday of this week, the 25th and 26th, Tech Week is happening in downtown Chicago. And I hope you can show up and visit our booth. We're going to have a few people from OWC working the booth. We're going to be there Thursday and Friday. And it's part of Tech Week. So you can get your hands on some OWC products. If you've ever been curious about, let's say, the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock, you know what? You're one of those people that want to touch it and feel it first before you actually purchase it. This is a perfect time to come in, talk to me. I'll be at the booth. Introduce yourself, and I'll say, "Hey, I'm Tim," and look at our products right there. It's a great opportunity to do so. And I'm looking forward to Tech Week. You know, I'm going to spend the next 3 days in Chicago. Chicago's such a great city, and if you're anywhere in the area, you should come out. It's at the Merchandise Mart. If you're in the Chicago area, or you know Chicago, you know the Merchandise Mart. That's where Tech Week's going to be. And look us up. It's going to be fun. Should be pretty cool. A couple things going on. Tech tip from blog.maxsales.com. And Steve Sandy wrote this. I thought this was an appropriate one because I just had to do this myself. You know, you could add more than one fingerprint to your iPhone to unlock it. A lot of people only do one thumb. Well, you could do both your thumbs. You could do all your fingers if you want. So it's probably a good idea to add more than one fingerprint to your phone. I mean, for instance, if you burn your thumb, Well, you can't really unlock your phone that way. Ever since I got my iPhone 6 Plus, I use the fingerprint technology on there to unlock my phone all the time. Actually, I did it with my 5S as well. It's one of those technologies that... It's kind of funny, sometimes I'll grab my older iPad before I got the newer one, and I'll sit there with my thumb on it wondering why it's not unlocking. Oh, hey, by the way, 2 weeks ago when I did the last episode, I mentioned that I was having a lot of problems with my music app, and I have a solution. Let me fire up my email application here. Which, by the way, can we please get a better email app? Seriously, it's... I have found a pretty good solution on the iPhone. When I'm on the road, by the way, that was my mail checking. I don't usually have it running when I'm recording a podcast, but there it is. When I'm on the road, I don't carry my MacBook with me to check my email. If I'm at an airport or on the showroom floor or doing something and I need to check my email, you can't pull out an iPad. You can't pull out a laptop. So that's what my iPhone is for. And I haven't been happy with Apple's mail app on the iPhone, well, pretty much since the beginning. It's always had one thing or another that just didn't work quite right. Last time... I updated the iOS app, or the iOS on it. Mail would just stop sending mail. No matter what settings I put in there, it just would not send mail. And I did a nuke and pave, I did everything I could think of. I knew that the information I was putting in the settings was correct, because it worked on the iPhone before. Excuse me. I got a cold and I'm still fighting this sinus infection. It worked on the Mac, it worked on my old iPhone, it was fine. But for whatever reason, I couldn't send email from any of the three accounts that I tie into all my iPhones. So I decided to give Microsoft Outlook a try. Is it Outlook? Yeah, Microsoft Outlook. It's a free app, and you don't have to be a subscriber to Microsoft 365 to use it. It's free. And I put the same credentials, same settings in it, and it works perfect. And I got to be honest with you, I really kind of dig this app. So if you're looking for a better email client on your iOS device, look at Outlook. You might really like it. So anyways, I figured out what the problem was with my music app. Joe sent an email in after the last episode. He wrote, "Hi Tim, I've had success with settings, general usage, managed storage, and wait for the list to populate. Then music, edit and delete all music. Sucks, but it beats a nuke and pave. I've seen it do that with corrupt songs, especially non-iTunes purchase content, and more frequently with songs that don't match. And yes, still out here listening, still appreciate the variety of the conversations. Be well and safe travels, Joe." Thanks very much, Joe. I do appreciate the feedback. If you like the variety of conversations, you're going to like the conversation here in a little bit with Ed. I really think so. I did try your suggestion, Joe, and unfortunately, it didn't help. It just, no matter what I did, every single time I would launch the music app, it would crash. Every single time. But I noticed when I launched it, it was going to a smart playlist, the last smart playlist that I was playing. It would load that smart playlist, just like that, it would crash. So that got me thinking, maybe it had something to do with a smart playlist. So I did a little bit of research online, and it turns out that smart playlists created before the last version of either iTunes or iOS came out, if you have a smart playlist, that seems to be what's causing the music app to crash. So what I did was I went to iTunes, and yes, I sync my phone to my computer through iTunes still. I don't do it over the air. Excuse me. I went to iTunes. I deleted every smart playlist I had. Probably 9 out of 10 of them I didn't use anymore anyways, but they were old smart playlists that were just kind of sitting there. But there were a few that I do like to have. For instance, I have one that's at least 4 stars, that hasn't been played in the last 365 days. That way it's music that I ranked highly, but I haven't listened to it in at least a year. And I like to go to that playlist occasionally and, oh, look, here's songs that I haven't listened to in over a year that I really like. So that's a really cool, smart playlist. And I limited it to like 25 songs. And every time I listen to a song on that playlist and I resync, that song comes out of the playlist because it's been played now. And so I have different smart playlists like that that I enjoy using. And I kind of know which those were, so I knew I will delete these older smart playlists. I'll resync my phone. Then I will recreate these smart playlists. And then I'll sync those new playlists over to my phone. So that's what I did. I wasn't sure if it was going to work. And what do you know? It works perfectly now. I can launch my music app. I can go to any list, smart playlist or regular playlist. I can go to artist or song. It just plays fine. So there's some weird bug in an old version of iTunes that if you created a smart playlist, it could cause, and I say could because it took a while for it to start doing this to me, it could cause your music app on your phone to crash, at least with the newer version of iOS. So that was the solution. I know I talked about that here on the last episode. I wanted to give you guys an update. It's working great for me now, which honestly I'm happy about. But the more I listen to, the more I learn about this new music streaming service that Apple's coming out with, I'm getting a little bit more excited about it. I really wasn't to begin with. And they're going to give everyone 3 months of a free trial. And artists are going to be paid now thanks to Taylor Swift. Or no, not Taylor Swift. What was her name? Doesn't matter. it's such a goofy news item that happened over the weekend. What is her name? Now that's going to bother me. Now I have to look it up. Let's see. I will go to, I think, CNN. Believe it or not, that's where I saw this news story initially. Taylor Swift, yeah. Okay. Is that what I said? I think that's what I said. So Taylor Swift writes a Dear Apple mail saying that it's not fair that artists will not be paid for streaming their music for the 3 months of this free subscription service that Apple's going to give everyone. And Apple immediately turns around and caves in and says, no, everyone's going to get paid. So that's a good thing, because if it's your work, you want to be paid for it, right? So I'm kind of with Taylor Swift on that. And good for Apple to, I don't want to say cave in, but come to their senses, let's say that. Anyways, where was I? that was just a weird news story. But the more I look at this music streaming thing, I gotta say I'm kind of excited about it. So I'm going to give it a try for those 3 months. It's going to have to be really fantastic, though, for me to give Apple yet more money on a regular basis to listen to music. Here's something cool. One of the problems with iMacs from 09 and newer, one of the problems is if you installed a third-party hard drive, that iMac fan would just start kind of going crazy. And so OWC announced a couple days ago, June 22nd, that we have a new do-it-yourself kit for iMac that now enables iMac owners to replace the factory-installed hard drive with a new hard drive up to 8 terabytes. Could you imagine 8 terabytes in your iMac? That's a lot of storage space. All while maintaining the proper system fan controls and native capabilities of Apple Diagnostics. The key features of it is it eliminates the excessive fan noise and maintains correct system fan control when upgrading the storage of a 2009 or newer iMac. It's engineered to work natively with Apple Diagnostic and then eliminates the thermal compatibility issues with third-party drives. You can use virtually any SATA drive now. It's ideal for iMac owners and service providers, and we do have the install videos on how to install this. So check out the blog. I'm going to put a link into it. Hard drive SMC compatibility kit for all iMacs 09 and newer, now supporting up to 8 terabytes. What this should tell you is that here at OWC, we're really committed to providing you guys with the solutions that you need to keep your older iMacs updated. You know, these an iMac is not an inexpensive purchase, and you shouldn't have to update it or replace it every 3 or 4 years because you're starting to run out of storage. So we have the solution for you, and if you've got one of those iMacs and you haven't upgraded your hard drive because of that issue, we've got you covered. We also have another upgrade kit, this one for the Xbox One. Now, a couple weeks ago at E3, Microsoft came out and said, hey, they've got a new Xbox coming, and it's going to have up to 1 terabyte of storage, which is great, except it's still that 1 terabyte, you know, 5400 RPM drive, so it's kind of slow. Well, if you want a lot better performance out of your Xbox One, we can give you 4 times the capabilities. We can give you a 2 terabyte option for your current Xbox One, or we can give you even a 1 terabyte SSD solid state drive, or even one of the 1 terabyte hybrid drives for your Xbox One. It will blow your mind. If you put a 1 terabyte SSD in your Xbox One, it'll launch stuff almost 40% faster. That's just massively significant. So if you've got an Xbox One and you want to get the most out of your gaming, OWC has you covered. Simply go to maxsales.com, or if you want to read our blog post on this new kit, it's OWC announces external storage upgrade kits for Microsoft Xbox One. So make sure you check that out. Now I'm going to jump over now to my conversation with Mr. Ed. Again, the audio quality is different than what you're used to, and that's because we did it via cell phone. And I'm going to do a little bit of editing and try to boost up the volume and make it sound a little bit better. But please forgive me and Ed for the audio quality. It's not quite as good as we're used to, but I think you'll agree that the content more than makes up for it. Ed is a fascinating individual. Like I said earlier, he's 79 years old, and you would never know it by listening to him talk. He's really a cool guy. I think you're going to like this. And again, thanks to John Putch for putting me in touch with Ed, because had he not done that, I wouldn't have this killer interview. I will see you guys in a week. And don't forget, if you're in the Chicagoland area, Thursday and Friday, Tech Week is going on. We'd love to see you at Tech Week. It's an opportunity to see OWC products in person. You can meet me in person. I'll be there. I'll have some other OWCers with me. Larry T is going to be there, and Brad I is going to be there. So really, two really great guys, I got to say. I love working shows with both of them. And so stop by the booth, say hello, check out some cool products, and see you then. Back here on OWC Radio number 43. To be honest, this is take two with my conversation with Ed. Hello, Ed.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Your name is Ed Gottwald, but most people locally to where you live and who has visited your store knows you as Mr. Ed.
That's right.
So this is kind of odd. I don't usually do this because Ed and I have already been talking for a good 15 minutes, but unfortunately Skype was just not cooperative. It kept dropping him left and right, so we decided to start from the beginning, and that's what we're doing here. I appreciate your patience, Ed. I really do.
Nope, not a problem.
So let's start at the beginning. You have a store that is pretty famous in Pennsylvania.
Well, actually it's pretty famous around the world, believe it or not.
I do believe it.
We started in 1975, February 26, 1975. And we started, it was then called Mr. Ed's and Territory's Most Unusual General Store. And we had a very small display of my elephants in that store at the time.
These are not live elephants.
No, these are part of my collection. So we had a lot of them packed away, but there wasn't room for them. So I guess after 8 years of being in that location, we moved up the road 2 miles to a bigger location and decided to make it a elephant museum. And when we did this, we found out very quickly that there's tens of thousands of elephant collectors. When I say elephants, I'm speaking about little statues or little teeny tiny things you can hold in the palm of your hand, or we have some four or five life-size ones around the property also.
Yeah,
these are made out of any kind of substance you can think of, known to man, or from many countries, and all kinds of shapes and sizes, from a potty chair to a hair dryer to a bong. So we have all kinds.
You know, I said this before, I'll say it again. I did a video search for Mr. Ed's Elephant Museum and Candy Emporium because I've never been there. And I wanted to see what this thing is that I'm going to talk to you about. And my kids actually watched some of these videos. A lot of these videos are people on vacation. They stop by, they pull out their iPhones, and they videotape. And I was amazed. It looks like a fantastic place. And my kids, now remember, I'm in Michigan, so to drive to you would take a day. My kids watched that. And they were just, can we go there? Can we go there? And they've asked a few times, especially my son, my seven-year-old. He's asked at least three times since we watched that video, Dad, can we go to the elephant place yet? So what an impression just videos on YouTube is making. And I have to imagine people uploading these and sharing them with their friends and family on Facebook and Twitter. And that's got to generate a lot of interest in coming and visiting as well.
Well, I have to admit that we are a little overwhelmed with the last 5 years of the way we've been received around the world. I've been in retail since I'm 10 years old. I'm 79. So I had a lot of experience with customer relations and so forth. I spent over 20 years in a supermarket in the Washington, D.C. area called Giant Food Stores. I started there as a produce clerk and became a store manager. So I had a lot of experience talking to people. And I found that a lot of Giant's philosophies we adopted ourselves when I opened my store. And when we opened the store, we're 12 miles outside of town, 12 miles west of Gettysburg. And we're quite a ways out, as they always told me. You're pretty far out. I heard this a lot. So we decided to take the name Mr. Ed and try to make Mr. Ed an entity, something that would bring people out to see this little fat man who sells peanuts. I went to every carnival, and I was judge at this thing. I was MC here, and then lo and behold, and I got an opportunity to do a show at Totem Pole Playhouse where John Putsch grew up, and that helped icing the cake some more. So Mr. Ed became an entity. So I would do things throughout the years that caused press to come out and say hello and take pictures and do things. In 1976, I stayed awake for 76 hours.
Wow.
And we promised anybody who called me asleep, we'd get a $100 bill. and John Putsch actually came across the back porch at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to catch me asleep. So we did stuff like that. And then when we had this fire in 2010, it got huge press. It just got amazing press. And I think that really made the difference. Because once business was reopened, our business literally doubled. And I made a movie with John Putsch, Ralph 30 movie. That didn't hurt anything either. So after making the third movie with John Putsch and all the notoriety from the fire and some philosophies we picked up and started using, it's been incredible. It's just been incredible that to become a destination, to have all this stuff come true, and I'm almost 80 years of age, it just warms my heart.
Could you have imagined this back in the 70s when you first opened this, that something like this would happen?
No, never, 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 never. My thought was at that time was I just wanted to make a decent living, you know? And that's what I wanted to do. And in the first several years, we didn't really make a living, you know? Things were tough. In fact, we filed bankruptcy in 1983.
Wow.
And we closed the store one day and opened the store the next day. We filed Chapter 11. We followed the rules completely, and things turned around at that point in time. So it's been just a fabulous experience with all these people coming in and relationships we kept with these people. They come all over the country. A lot of them come back year after year, and they bring their children back and have pictures taken with them. My picture's taken dozens of times a week, but people want to have a picture of this little fat man making peanuts, you know? I love it, but I wonder, when they go back home to Arkansas or Oshkosh and they show this picture of this little fat bearded man, why do they have it? Or they tell people? So it's been fun. Great fun for me.
America, when I was growing up, it seemed like every little small town, and I know I'm repeating it to Ed because, again, our conversation was interrupted, but the listeners haven't heard this yet, Ed. When I was growing up in the 70s and part of the 80s, every little town, it seemed like, had their own special attractions. Now, here in Battle Creek, that was based around cereal. When you get closer to Detroit, there was a lot of small little car museums. You would find these attractions, roadside attractions, some of them. In fact, there was a crocodile guy who had crocodiles or alligators. I think it was alligators, actually. And he would let people come in and see feeding the alligators. And you'd give them a couple bucks. It didn't cost much. And the kids loved it. But you'd see these things all over the place. Well, those types of businesses, for one reason or another, have kind of disappeared from the American landscape. And I think, collectively, we miss that. And your Mr. Ed's hasn't disappeared. In fact, you were telling me that your granddaughter has taken over the business now, and now that you're the founder, she does the day-to-day operations. I think that America needs things like this. I think, collectively, we miss not having these things. And it's, yes, electronics are very popular, social media, but we still like to go physically and see things. We like to meet people. And I think that's, for a lot of people anyways, I would imagine that's the attraction. It's not that you're a throwback. It's that you're still there. The history is still there.
Well, as a kid living in New York, Pennsylvania, and going away on Sunday afternoons, they had these roadside attractions, and some of them were really unique, and some were just small little things. One guy built this house into a shoe house, made of a shoe. He had people living in it. One guy had a big ship he built along the road as a restaurant. One guy had a bear in a cage. Some guy had deer to fed. So people still remember that, people or not, and they come here, and we have gardens they walk through, and we have an elephant that talks to you, and just many things throughout the store. You walk in the front door, there's a huge elephant standing in the middle of the store, a life-size elephant. And people like nostalgia. Like I come in there and they say, I had this candy when I was a little boy. Or mm-hmm. My grandmother had this candy. And people like to remember the good times. And when you think about your life, what you remember most of all in the past is the good times. You kind of take the bad times and put them aside. So the good times, you remember those. You walk into a place and you smell the popcorn cooking or the peanuts cooking, and it brings back all these wonderful tastes and smells and things you see when you were a little kid or your grandmother told you about. It's just a wonderful experience.
And you want to pass that on to the next generation, too.
Exactly. My granddaughter, 5 years ago, and her husband came forward and said, we want to become part of the business. So I hired him to come on board and to try to teach him all I could teach him. And July 1st of last year, we sold the business to them, and I'm now the founder, not the owner, the founder. But I'm still very active in everything day to day. I'm still preaching my philosophies. I have philosophies that I learned as a child. You know, one of them is, as long as you're green, you grow. Once you think you're right, you start to get rotten.
I love that.
And it's so very true. And the high tech is great, you know, and I don't use high tech. I'm not as high tech as they are. But I give a talk called The Ten Commandments for Good Business. It's a motivational speech, and I'm blowing my own horn now, but I always say, if you don't blow your own horn, you never hear it played.
That's right.
So this talk I give to corporations and business people, it's excellent, has nothing to do with high tech, has all to do with people. And I'll ask them, how many here are in the people business? And half of them will raise their hands. The other half, I'll say, what do you do? Well, I'm a shoe salesman. I say, well, who do you sell it to? Well, people. Well, people. And they don't realize that they're in the people business.
Everybody is.
Yes. And when people walk into the store, I want to see them more than once. I want to see them again and again and again. So in my store, people walk in the front door, everybody gets greeted. Every single person gets greeted. And if I'm there, I talk to everybody. And people love it.
It makes a huge difference.
They're so away from being talked to. You know, you used to drive down the road on the turnpike, and you got to the toll booth, you talk to the guy there. Now it's easy pass. You don't talk to them. You go to the supermarket, and you can check your own groceries out. You can walk through that whole store and spend $200 and never talk to a soul. So people are just dying to have you talk to them.
Oh,
and I believe this. That's Oh, it's part of my speech.
I think you're 100% right. You know, like you said, I'll give you an example of this. There's a Walmart moving in, or supposedly, down the street from our local grocery store. And they've been there for years and years and years. And I was talking to the manager, and he says, yeah, we're kind of worried about this because we can't compete with Walmart in price. And I said, no, you can't. And he said, so, you know, I don't know how long we're going to survive. And I said, it could actually make your business stronger. And he asked how. And I said, well, where we were standing, I could see three or four employees standing up at the service counter. It didn't look like they were doing anything. I said, could you imagine every 10 minutes you send one of those people up and down every single aisle asking everyone, have you found everything? Do you need any help? If you've got an elderly lady, she can't reach the top shelves, maybe you send somebody with her throughout the entire store and help her shop. I said, you give that kind of customer service, people are willing to pay extra to get that kind of service. It's not always
you
about saving money.
You and I are kindred spirits. You're saying the words that I've been saying for years. You and I are definitely kindred spirits because I believe this. I truly believe this. I believe that our success here has been the fact that we talk to the customer.
Yep.
And one of our rules is the customer's always right.
You know, the service industry
don't believe that.
Oh, it's 100% right. And the service industry is a good example. Waitresses that don't do their job well don't make money because people don't leave tips. But we've all been to a restaurant where we got exceptional service. They weren't there too often, but when they were very, very helpful. They talked to you. They didn't act like you were bothering them. And those are the people that get the big tips, that make a lot more money than the average waitress who doesn't. And I think those are the kind of things that we need to not forget, that we need to bring into, you know, the online conversations that we have with people, with our interactions with people every day. And if more businesses and more people embraced your philosophies, Ed, I think it would be a much better world.
Well, I promise any business corporation that invites me to speak to 100 of their store managers, I will guarantee them their business will improve without spending a penny just by taking these 10 commandments. My goal is not to allow a founder, not the owner, to have more time. My goal is to really work in this and become well-known and doing it and someday become famous as a speaker instead of a peanut seller.
Well, have you ever thought of writing a book?
Well, my granddaughter's doing that.
Yeah, oh, great. You have to let me know after the fact when it's ready because I would be happy to promote that.
He's doing it. So I'm just hoping that people call me and say, hey, my corporation wants to talk to you. And once I do this to four or five big companies, I know it's going to spread to me across the country because I know it's important. And I have customers tell me this, you know. And there's nothing more important than people. I mean, there's nothing. Without people, I am zero.
Absolutely.
You know, and a lot of folks don't know this. And having friends like John Putch, who comes through and puts me in three movies, I mean, good Lord.
That's cool, isn't it?
And with my name and paid myself, shoots in my store, and people come in to see where the movie was shot. That kind of stuff is because of friendships and relationships. So I'm very blessed at my age to be healthy enough to still be able to talk and do things.
Let's go back in time. You're, let's say, 16, 17 years old. What did Ed want to do at that point? Because obviously you couldn't imagine what you're doing now. What was it that you thought you wanted to do?
Well, if you said 15, that was a good thing to pick, you know. Give you a real quick background story. When I was 6 years old, my father worked at a paper mill in New York. He brought a whole stack of outdated calendars home. And I took these calendars in my neighborhood door to door and sold them.
You were an entrepreneur at a very young age.
So that's just about. But at 15, I left New York. My mother and father were divorced. I went to live with him in Washington, D.C. And I went there to get a job. I was told that I had to be 16 to get a work permit. So a friend of mine was a photographer. Took my birth certificate, took a picture of it, cut a number out, made a new picture, a new birth certificate, and made me instantly 16 years of age. So I wanted to work for Giant food stores. And my goal at that point in time, at 15, was to be a department manager, a district manager of the whole chain. And that's what I wanted to do. And I worked towards that. I was I worked at the Delicatessen Department. I worked at the Produce Department. And I got up to as a cashier. And I was assistant manager. I became a store manager. And for almost over 20 years, I was a store manager for Giants. And after being a manager for 15, 16 years, I realized that my goal to be a district manager was a pretty nice goal, but I realized that if that happened, that I would still not make much more money I'm making right now and work many hours, but I would still be tied down to the corporate rules that they set down. And I was a bit of a maverick, and I didn't believe in some of the rules they set down. I was more interested in doing it the way I thought the customer wanted. So that's when I decided to leave Giant and go work for myself. But at 15, I was working as a produce clerk, and my goal was to move up in the company. And I did, you know, and it was some shaky times, but I did. And I didn't realize it. I quit school in the eighth grade. I have an eighth grade education. So my high school and my college was Giant food stores. And I didn't realize it at the time that they were teaching me a whole bunch of stuff.
And then when I left
them to open my own business, what I learned from them was just priceless. I mean, it was just priceless what they taught me about business. And I used it, I still use it to this day.
Did your parents see you become a business owner?
Yes, I think that was it. Yeah.
What'd they think about that?
Well, they weren't pleased. Because
it's a big risk.
They thought, what really turned it around was they always would send us to different seminars to help us learn more. We went to the seminar in 1974, and it was about a fellow who told you about thinking out of the box. It was called transactional analysis. And he wanted you to think out of the box, think out of the box. So I did, and I quit my job. And I told them that. And we left friendly, but they said, well, we had plans for you. I said, well, I know, but I want to make sure I can do what I want to do, and I think I can do it on my own, and I can be successful. So I quit back in 1975, a job. I was making over $500 a week, which was pretty good money back then.
Sure.
Had a big house and a big car, and I was a big wheelman. And I worked at the time. I lived in Richmond, Virginia. And being a store manager in Richmond, you were a big shot. And I loved being a big shot. But I said, you know, we just got to do something. So I sold my wonderful home and took my car and I sold it. I bought a van instead so I could haul stuff and moved to Pennsylvania and bought this place. And we had, you know, just we hoped it was going to be good, but I wasn't sure. But I just believed it, you know, and I'm a hard-headed Dutchman, you know, and I didn't like being told no. To say, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, I'm not sure about that. And most of the times when the person tells you no, if you sit there and talk a little bit, suddenly that no becomes, well, but maybe we'll try that. So that's what we did. And being a hard-headed Dutchman has been a good thing. You know, when the night of the fire, standing there in front of the store and it's blazing behind me and this idiot with a TV camera is taking pictures. He says, can I interview you? I said, sure. He says, what are you going to do? And I'm standing there, and the fire's behind me. I said, well, I guess the first thing we'll do is put the fire out. And then he said, what's next? I said, well, we're going to start rebuilding tomorrow. And I said that I probably didn't really mean it, but it sounded pretty brave. And we did, actually. We started building the next day.
Wow. And you had people from all over the place sending you. Because you said it, obviously that was in the other part of the interview that we lost. You lost over 2,000 elephants, but people started donating to you.
What happened was the day after the fire, I discovered more and more about what I'd done in the past was going to come back to me. Because the fellow who issues the permits for the rebuild came out that morning after the fire to issue a permit.
That
I was
day.
Told that this guy is really tough. He's a nice man, but he's tough. If that T isn't crossed just right, you're done. And maybe your hair's combed wrong, you might not do well. He said, "Is he prepared to be crucified?" So he walked up to me, and the first thing he said was, first, I have to give you a hug. And I thought, well, that's not what I expected to happen.
No.
He says, 20 years ago, he came to my daughter's school and talked about elephants and gave her a little gold elephant charm. She still has it. She told me this morning, you take good care of Mr. Ed.
Wow.
And I thought, yeah, and that's what I thought was wow. And as the days progressed, we found out more and more people. We had we lost 2,000 elephants in the fire. We had 8,000 more that were black, dirty black. My granddaughter had to save the elephant day, and over 100 people showed up from 5 states with toothbrushes to clean these 8,000 elephants.
Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, standing there in this group of people, I cried so much after the fire, not about the damn fire, but about how nice people were. And they said, well, you've been nice to us. I heard a lot. You've been nice to my father. You've been nice to this company. You've been nice to this charity. And, you know, you don't really think about it, but as you go through life, you plant seeds.
Absolutely.
You know, good or bad, you plant seeds. And those damn things will grow. And I'm finding it out more and more every day that they do grow. And the success of this new store is, I think, is because of all the seeds that were planted in the years before. And I'm totally aware of that. I'm humbled by the fact that these many people, then we started sending in donations of elephants. And we put, until the museum full, was over 12,000, and they still kept coming in. So I said to them, I said, listen, folks, I don't have more room, but I'm going to back away, and I promise you that someday we'll do something with them spectacular. We'll do something that's going to make you smile. And I said, if you still want to donate them, yes, we know you will. So it's been 5 years since the fire. 3 months ago, a friend of mine, named Joe Colasso, he used to drive the train to Ringling Brothers Circus back across the country. He was called the Train Master. He retired, and he moved to Wisconsin, Baraboo, Wisconsin, where he bought a mansion house belonging to a man named Al Ringling. So I said, Joe, how about we make one of those rooms an elephant museum? He said, I'd be honored. I'm getting chills sitting here talking this. He said, I'd be honored. So we're going to take these elephants out to Joe for his museum. The Ringling brothers grew up in this house.
That's amazing.
Now you tell me a better place that I could do this.
Oh no, it's perfect. I mean, you couldn't ask for
write stuff like this.
No,
you can't. You know, it's just, you know, I think, oh my. So once again, the man upstairs is blessing me one way or another, just by cutting down. You know, and the people I tell, they're thrilled. One is bigger and pride.
You know,
and I can understand that.
I've said this before, but I think it's worth repeating. In today's day and age of 24-hour news channels, constant information coming at us through news stuff on the internet, Twitter, Facebook, it's very popular to post the negative stuff. And it kind of seems like everything is just bad sometimes. And look at how many bad people are out there doing bad things. But I firmly believe that most people in the world are good people, that most people in the world you could leave your child with and not worry about it, that they would take care of your child when you had to do something. They would look after your best interests. You agree with that?
Amen. Completely. 100%.
So why elephants? How did the elephant thing start?
Well, on my wedding day, on February 26, 1967, my sister-in-law gave me an elephant for a wedding present. And I remember vividly, as well, a nice guy, and I said to her, what the hell is this for? She said, for good luck. So on our honeymoon in Williamsburg, Pat and I bought 4 more elephants for no particular reason. On the way home, I said, honey, I'm going to start collecting elephants. And I did, and it just got out of hand. I mean, I was store manager for Giant. My customers was going on vacation and bring me an elephant. Every holiday, I got an elephant. Anybody walked by a flea market and saw an elephant, they bought the elephant. And it just grew and grew and grew. And the main thing was that we had all these elephants in the museum now, you know, when I first set it up. And I was going to charge $1 a piece to come in. And I realized after the first week that I thought these were all given to me. You know, these were not, I didn't buy these. People gave these to me. I should share this. So we stopped totally charging admission. There's no admission to the museum. They just don't do it. And that's the right thing to do, I believe. And along with that, I lost my daughter 7 years ago, 46 years of age. Terrible blow. Never over it, never will be. But she was an animal lover. So we formed the Tammy Lee Cullison Save the Animal Fund. And all donations go to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee, or to the SPCA, or to some place where animals are being cared for. And it's perfect.
Now, you said your granddaughter has taken over the business. Is that her daughter?
Yes. 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 And it's for me, I see my daughter in her every time I look at her.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, she's honoring her mom and her grandfather.
Yes, and I know that Tammy's looking down and saying, "Way to go, Dad! Way to go, Nicole!" I know she is. I just know she is. You know, it's very heartwarming. I'm a very emotional guy. I cry at stoplights. You know, but I get emotional throughout the week on many occasions when something pops up. You know, that reminds me of my daughter. I realize how lovely it is to have my granddaughter with me in the business. It's just, life is great.
You sound like you're blessed.
Oh, totally. Totally. I never went to church in my life, ever. My granddaughter didn't really go to church herself a whole lot, but a church down the road asked her if she'd play the flute for a Christmas cantata. And she did, and I went down to it, and it was really cool. I thought, man, this choir is amazing. And I guess maybe a year later, my daughter died, and this minister took care of the funeral. And then a month after the funeral, my granddaughter got married, 1 month later, and he did the wedding. So we started going to church there. I started going to church on a regular basis. I thought, well, this roof's going to cave in sure as hell. So one morning in the church, my granddaughter said to me, "You ought to join the choir." I said, "Right, I ought to join the choir. Certainly, that's a wonderful idea." And next Sunday, she said, "You're going to join the choir?" So I joined the choir. I now sing in the church choir.
That's crazy.
I walk down the aisle in that room somewhere, and I think, he's got to be saying, "Holy crap, I can't believe he's there," you know? And I totally, totally love it. And it's brought me close to the God, of course. And it's a good thing, you know, but so much has happened in my life that I really didn't. Myself, somebody already told me to do this or decided for me, you know. And it's just that I believe when I hear opportunity knock, I open the door and listen. You know, not ignore it.
You know, at your age, a lot of people tend to just look back. At your age, a lot of people think, well, there's obviously much more behind me than in front of me. But it doesn't sound like you're doing that. It sounds like you're still looking forward. You're still looking ahead to the future.
Well, I am. You know, and that's just the way I am, I guess. But happy this interview today with you. I got an interview tomorrow with one of the visitor centers in Pennsylvania. I'm going to be speaking twice in July, my talk. I'm having a movie premiere for about 33 movie in Chambersburg. I start a new movie in August, John's fourth movie. Total Full Playhouse is very near and dear to me. It's part of John's life. I spent 40 of my years.
Yeah, we talked about it when he was on the podcast.
Well, I went down to see the new man there a couple of weeks ago. We were friends, and I said, I have to ask you a question. I said, 30 years ago, I did a show here called A Funny Thing Happened in the Way of Its Form. I played Erroneous. You're doing that show next year. I'll be 80 years old. I would love to do that role again next year at 80. And he said, well, we're making some thought for that, you know? And as I left, I thought, well, that took balls. I'm 80 here. I'm standing at 79. I might not even be here at 80. And I thought, well, if I'm not, I just won't do it.
Yeah, it might be a little difficult.
But my goal is to do that show at 80, and I would just love to do it. I just can't wait to do that. And I think that's that keeps you moving, keeps juices flowing, keeps you able to walk around and talk to people. And you forget about the fact that maybe you do have a pain here and there, you know, but life is precious. And people who do not take advantage of the fact that it is, you know, there's a show called MAME, Anti-MAME. One of the lines is, the world is a smorgasbord, and half the people are starving.
Ed, I want to thank you for coming on OWC Radio this week. What is the address? So if people are in the area, they can come and see Mr. Ed's Elephant Museum and Candy Emporium.
Well, MrEds.com is our website, because the word Mr. is always spelled out. And we're in a little town called Alcana, Pennsylvania, which we're not, we're on the outskirts of the town. The town's about as big as... It's not very big. And but anytime you get anywhere near, look up online. We're online in many places. Look up Mr. Ed, just Mr. Ed, and you'll find me. Look up Ed Gottwalt, you'll find Mr. Ed, and you'll hear about all the things. So we're here at MrEd.com, and we welcome everybody, and they should always come in here and say, I heard you on the radio. And all those corporations out there listening in right now who don't have anybody to give them a wonderful speech, I'm here. I'm not cheap, but I'm here.
I honestly think that you will get some people reaching out to you, because just talking to you for a half hour here on OWC Radio was a real pleasure, and I really want to thank you for coming on this week. Thanks, Ed.
Oh, it's great to follow John Plush, let me tell you.